Chapter 71. They were calling him Solon Stormrider. They said that his hair was growing in white because of the snow-laden seas through which his longboats had plunged. Or they said it had turned white after the winter sea had chewed on him and found him too tough and spat him back out. His boat had capsized once, and even his magic had barely saved him as he swam a mile through storm-whipped seas. Of course, his hair had been growing in white since he'd used Curoc, long before this mad winter, and he'd explained that to the soldiers and sailors who'd begun to follow him. But they preferred their own versions. Now it was spring, and Solon was headed back to Queen Wariamo, having destroyed her enemies. He had bowed before her after saving her life, and she had told him, fury edging her voice, that the price for her hand was cleansing the isles of the rebellion he had started by killing Oshobi Takeda. Takeda didn't like being weak, didn't like needing anyone, but her temper always cooled in time. At least, it used to. Everyone had expected Solon to wait for spring and take an army to each of the Takeda Isles. Instead, he'd begun at once. Alone. In a canoe, he'd paddled the 18 miles to Durai. There, he'd given the ultimatum he would give a dozen times through the winter. Surrender. Swear fealty to the Queen, and give me all your weapons, or I shall slay every man who fights and take those who surrender as slaves. Gulon Takeda had laughed at him and died, along with 18 of his soldiers. Solon had returned with 24 awed soldiers in a longboat. He had delivered them to the new Mikaidon and slept in a dockside tavern, not seeking so much as a word with Takeda. By the time he'd woken and gone out to his canoe, a score of the craziest sailors he'd ever met and a captain with a vendetta against the Takedas volunteered to join him. Soon, storms battered them every time they left port, and Solon's command of weather magic grew by necessity. But Sethi winter storms were tamed by no mage, and it was a fight every day. Several times, the Takedas who had forced them were so stunned that anyone should be able to make the crossing, they had surrendered on the spot. And when Solon returned to Hokkai yet again, victorious yet again, he found the Takeda soldiers he'd conscripted were a fully trusted part of the Sethi army, oddly proud to have been defeated by the Stormrider. Now it was done. The Takeda's home island, Horai, hadn't expected an army for at least another 6 weeks. The leaders were totally unprepared, and having almost 3,000 men to Solon's 400 did them no good. Before the Takeda army could be rallied, its commanders were dead, and Solon's magic-enhanced voice had offered generous terms to the living. The rebellion was crushed, and nearly all of the dead were Takedas. With the first day of spring, the first day clear enough that the merchants would be on their boats preparing for the first spring runs, checking for damage, repairing sails and nets, shouting orders at men rusty from months spent ashore, Solon's little fleet sailed into Hokkai Harbor. They were greeted as heroes, and the crazy sailors who had joined Solon first were now soldiers in truth. Sailors dropped their gear to greet them. Captains forgot their shouting, and the shoreboat traders and vintners streamed through the streets to greet them. The flood carried them to the castle, and Solon's heart thudded with fear and expectation.
Takeda, please, my love, don't take my glory as an insult. Without you, it all means nothing.
The crowd brought him to Whitecliff Castle, shining in the spring sun. Takeda stood on the dais, where months before she had almost been deposed. She wore an ocean blue nagika and a platinum tiara with sapphires. She raised her hands, and the men and women quieted. "How fare the islands, Storm Rider?"
"The isles are at peace, Your Majesty."
The people cheered, but Cada's face was still somber. She let the people cheer, then raised her hands once more. "They say you are a mage, Storm Rider."
"I am," he said.
The crowd grew quieter, noting the queen's solemnity. That solemnity brought to not a few minds the questions people had asked when Solon had first been sent to school with the Midcrai Magi. Where would his loyalties lie? "They say you are a god, Storm Rider, to have defied the winter seas alone."
"Neither a god nor alone, Your Majesty.
A loyal son of Seth who tracked the seas with men and women fearless as tigers, fiercer than storms, and hungrier than the seas. Not even winter seas could stop such from serving you." The crowd stirred with hope, and Solon's Storm Riders swelled with pride that he should share the glory so liberally. But Cada cut it off quickly. "They say you were our prince, Storm Rider. They say I've stolen your throne."
Silence.
"A prince I was, of an ancient house that my elder brother debased and dishonored. He broke the holy covenant between king and country, and I stand a prince no more. Should you command, I will sail to the sunset or to death's rocky shores. I am but a man." He lowered his voice, but still it carried across the silent crowd.
"A man who loves you, my queen."
She stood silent, and the crowd held its breath. But Solon could see her eyes shining. "Then, Solon Stormrider, Solon Tophusen, come forward and receive your rewards as a mage and a loyal son of Seth. And a man." He was in a haze as the crowd pulled him forward, laughing and cheering and shouting. Cada first presented him with a pendant with a glowing ruby lit from within, burning with ancient magics. He'd never seen it before, never heard of such an artifact, but before he could consider it, she put a crown on his brow. It was his father's crown, a circlet of 7 golden grape leaves mingled with 7 golden waves. A ruby fit for a mage. A crown fit for Seth's most loyal son. And, if you will have me, a proud and troublesome woman, ill fit for any man.
"Except one," Solon said.
And he swept her into his arms and kissed her.